especially with the pandemic. So many people lost their jobs and then equally lost their healthcare. I think our healthcare institution is very outdated. It's focused on how much shareholder profit.
This is Peter Holzapfel, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Infection Election, from poll bearers to poll watchers. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. On July 8th, Mark Anthony Urquiza, with his sons as pallbearers, was carried to his final resting place in Phoenix's Holy Cross Cemetery. He died of COVID-19 complications, on a ventilator, alone, but for a healthcare worker holding his hand. Urquiza's passing might have gone with scant notice, like far too many of the more than 217,000 people in the United States who've succumbed to this deadly disease so far, had his daughter Kristen not penned an obituary that garnered national attention. His death is due to the carelessness of the politicians, Kristen wrote, who continue to jeopardize the health of brown bodies through a clear lack of leadership, refusal to acknowledge the severity of this crisis, and inability and unwillingness to give clear and decisive direction, she said. Kristen Urquiza places the blame for her father's untimely death squarely with President Donald Trump.
My dad was a healthy 65-year-old.
Kristen spoke at the Democratic convention this summer.
His only pre-existing condition was trusting Donald Trump, and for that, he paid with his life.
Trump's calamitous pandemic response has cast a pall of death and economic calamity over the country as he inflames racism and division in the lead-up to this infection election. After 9 months of downplaying and outright lying about the pandemic, the White House, perhaps now better called the Blight House, is a COVID-19 hotspot itself. On Wednesday, we learned that Trump's teenage son Barron tested positive for the virus. Less than 3 weeks ago, the indoor reception and packed Rose Garden ceremony for Amy Coney Barrett's Supreme Court nomination, with no social distancing and very few masks, created a likely super spreader event. At least 40 people who were there or otherwise close to Trump have since tested positive. Trump, after being hospitalized, returned to the White House, ignoring CDC standards and medical norms, dramatically removed his mask and walked inside, potentially infecting staff and others. Days later, he held a rally on the South Lawn, with many of those attending not wearing masks, closely packed in. From Florida to Pennsylvania to Iowa, maskless crowds have gathered at Trump rallies, where Trump claims he's now immune to COVID-19 and not contagious, providing no medical evidence. Trump is also actively promoting a dangerous herd immunity response to the pandemic, risking millions of deaths. Meanwhile, infections and hospitalizations are surging as the long-predicted autumn COVID-19 wave strikes. With close to 60,000 new cases reported Wednesday in the U.S., intensive care units from North Dakota to Wisconsin to Mississippi are at or near capacity. The pandemic has caused the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. Many tens of millions are out of work. Many face eviction because they can't pay their rent. Yet Trump and the Republican-controlled Senate continue to stonewall federal COVID-19 relief. Instead, they're attempting to ram through the confirmation of Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court. The hearings have revealed some of Barrett's disturbing legal views, including her belief that the right to bear arms is inviolable, but the right to vote is not. She refused to answer questions about the Affordable Care Act, Roe v. Wade, voting rights, or even if President Trump could delay the election or refuse to transfer power peacefully. Republicans are aggressively attempting to suppress Democratic votes. One of Trump's sons, Donald Jr., has called for volunteers to join an army for Trump's election security at Democratic precincts to challenge the right of individuals to cast their vote, to question the signatures on mail-in ballots and otherwise intimidate and discourage voters. In Pennsylvania, a judge ruled the Trump campaign's deployment of so-called poll watchers in Philadelphia violated state law. Guns Down America reports that in the swing states of Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Wisconsin, quote, the threat of armed individuals disrupting polling places is not theoretical. Private citizens with firearms have demonstrated at polling places during the 2016 and 2018 elections and are poised to do so again this November, they wrote. In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott limited each county to just one ballot drop location, regardless of county population. Thus, Harris County, including Houston, with over 4.7 million residents, gets as many ballot drop locations as Loving County's 169 residents. Ohio's Republican Secretary of State Frank LaRose similarly ordered just one ballot drop location per county, regardless of population. The intent is clear. Make it hard to vote in cities which tend to vote Democratic. Despite the obstacles, the threat of thugs at polling places and the looming tsunami of lawsuits promised by Trump and the Republicans, over 14 million people have already voted early, shattering previous records. Many are risking exposure to COVID-19, enduring lines that can take over 10 hours to cast their vote. During this infection election, voting is a vaccination for our ailing body politic. Mass participation just might be a miracle cure. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
This is a red alert. Please remain calm. Every precaution will be taken for your protection. Keep your radio tuned to this place on the dial throughout the alert period for information. Telephone service to your home may be cut off to permit military and civil defense authorities to carry out vital operations. Take shelter in your basement or in your nearest shelter area. If you can plug in your radio in the basement, take it with you. Use a portable radio set if you have one. Otherwise, turn up the volume of your radio so that you can hear it in the basement. Keep calm. Don't lose your head. This station will continue to stay on the air throughout the alert period to bring you authentic information and official instructions. Refuse to listen to unauthorized rumors or broadcasts. This is your official broadcast.
In accordance with the authority vested in me, I hereby declare a emergency to exist.
Positive or negative. In this podcast, I will also be trying to implement some advocation for my fellow students and school staff worldwide, because everyone could use some advocation here and then. Now, without further ado, let's get into it. Hello, you wonderful people. It's your host, and this week I'm bringing to you, I do not know what week of school this is, and I do not know what number of podcast this is, to keep it real, but, you know, just some updates on how I'm doing in school right now. My grades, they're kind of like, okay, so they're not bad, but they're not as good as I wanted them, so I'm not going to let that discourage me like I did last year, because that did result in a bad outcome. So, you know, I'm keeping up positive energy about it. I'm gonna like stay after school and stuff, and you know, try to get those grades up. So also, I did post a poll on my Snapchat. Let me just read to you what it, the question was. Not the, yeah, I guess the question, yes, what the question was. The question was, what kind of advocacy could you use right now during school? So I got a few responses. I didn't get as many as I like would normally get because I did post it only a day before the podcast. So, but that's good though. These responses are pretty good. So I can go off of these. And I also have Phoebe here with me on Skype if you want to say what's up.
Hey, y'all. Hey.
So like this first response says mental health. And the second one also ties with that. It says help for college and mental health help. So, okay. And this one said, personally, I think I need more creative outlets and help on behind work. As do I. But I definitely think the school should give kids more mental support because nothing in life is set up for us. Nothing in life has set us up for this. And I'm pretty sure we're all losing our minds. Yeah, I relate to that. I was kind of losing my mind in the first, like, second to third week of school online. But I've kind of adopted the attitude to be a little bit different. But I do relate to this response. And I definitely think that the school should support kids more mental support. This one has two parts, this response. The first part is definitely want mental health checks. A big part of us doing well in school relies on the state of our mental health, and they need to realize that with everything going on in the world right now, it's hard for us to drop everything and, second part, focus on school. We're stressed and anxious, and nobody's telling us how to deal with these feelings. I think school systems everywhere need to realize that we're not machines. We're just kids, bro. What do you think about this, Phoebe?
Ooh, that hits me hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, every person brought up mental health. That's really striking. Mm-hmm. It makes me really respect how actually introspective and self-aware young people are, even though they don't get credit for it. Mm-hmm. I think there's a relationship between, right, like people being naming, oh, creative outlets or something that could help. And like, I think schools, it's not like schools were set up to necessarily be great mental health service providers, but they were the place where you were empowered to like figure out how to tend your mental health in some ways, right? Like yeah. There was, you could go do different things or have different outlets or get out of the house, and like it could bring its own mental health challenges. Yeah. But it definitely makes sense that it's a void. And also I just like that I hear like a plea almost in this that's like, can mm-hmm. y'all just like recognize we're humans struggling alongside you in this unknown time. Mm-hmm. And we're like, we're not adults even, you know, and yeah. You're holding us to extraordinarily high expectations of show up. When most people like are still off work or whatever, it's mm-hmm. yeah, it's a big ask. And like, I think schools, it's almost like everyone knew this was coming and has been talking about it, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel like anything actually really changed to yeah. hold you.
And this line, like, it says, well, it's the same comment, but I'm just like quoting some of it. We're stressed and anxious and nobody's telling us how to deal with these feelings. Yeah, because, like, you know, they're just kind of expecting you're just going to, like, deal with it and be okay with it. I have a health teacher. Like, she's aware, like, that students could use help in those aspects, like, stress and anxiety-wise. So she's just like, oh, just let me know and stuff like that. But, like, that's kind of harder, like, on an online thing. Like, if you're doing schooling online, reaching out to a health teacher, like, she's really good in that aspect, but, like, I don't think that's, like, I don't know, like, some kids would just think that's way, not, like, doing too much, but, like, they're already on the computer enough as it is, so for them to have interaction again online to, like, speak about how they're feeling, I just don't think they're up for that. Like, it's just, like, draining.
Yeah, it's a great point. Because I do feel like there are people available to provide some services and supports. It's always the connection that's hard. So I appreciate you bringing that perspective in, right, of maybe that would be accessible. We're already so tapped out. The thought of spending like another 2 hours online to do that is daunting.
Yeah.
Are there other things with internet, you know, communication? Like, is it just too distant to feel comfortable talking about mental health stuff? Or like, I don't know, like, what do you think keeps youth from plugging into that?
If you're home and you want to reach out to someone about your mental health, if you're around family, you might not want to talk about that around your family. So if you don't want to like log online on a Google Meet and tell someone how you're feeling when your family's sitting like right next to you in the living room, so that can be like really uncomfortable. I know I wouldn't want to. So
yeah,
definitely that.
So as always, these like moments bring me into thinking about advocacy and that piece of your mission. Yeah, we've been really lucky. I think that the Clubhouse has been able to have some in-person connection still. So it's like makes me think about that might be a space, right? That is different. That's not online, that a person could come and try to plug in. Yeah. I know that there's something starting up soon with like Ebony's looking to kick off sort of a more one-on-one direct, like she's thinking of it kind of in a mentorship framework, but like having more of a support system for people. And I think she mentioned that she talked to you like a year ago about this, but that it's like kind of coming back around as something that feels important on Sundays as like a drop-in space for people to come and get some support. And I'm curious too, like when y'all, you know, like, I don't know, from your perspective, when you're naming like stress or anxiety or seeing stress or anxiety or depression showing up in your peers, what kind of supports do you think are actually what, like, what different types of supports are needed? You know, is it a counselor? Is it just a safe space to go hang out? Is it, yeah, like, what are the different things that actually make a difference in that?
Well, one, a safe place. So, like, you can, like, get away from that stuff that's making you depressed, anxious, stressed, and all that other stuff. Because, like, if you're, like, in that environment, like, all the time, 24-7, like, it can be very, like, detrimental to your mental state and your mental health. So, that. And I think a therapist would help. Like, for me, I feel like if I had a therapist, I'd be, like, a lot. Like, I'd be doing a lot better. But, like, here's the thing, like, with therapists, like, some people might not feel, like, that comfortable to, like, speak about everything because there's not that, like, close connection. Like, here at the Clubhouse, I can tell anybody, like, I can tell anybody anything because, like, you know, I have a connection with everybody here, so I trust everybody here. Like, with a therapist, like, that you don't know, it can be hard to do that. But I feel like it would help. Like, even if you came down here over, to the Clubhouse and you like build a connection with someone and talk to someone about it, like they help. So
all right, well, that's on our I think on our mission task list, right? Is to see if we get a counselor, a therapist who can like offer hours at Clubhouse in a private place, quiet place. And I know we were doing some research because there was some advocacy happening over the summer that trying to get that in, and one of the big issues that came up is like, is it possible for us to get access to those services without having to have our parents give permission? For the same reason you were saying, you probably don't want to take that call in the house, right? Like, you don't want to necessarily have to tell your family that's what's going on for who knows what reason, right? Whatever reason, it's yours to manage. So that was the piece. So I hear that. I'm glad to hear that that's something that would be supportive, and it seems like it's really critical. To your point about like your therapist is somebody who's like outside, like you may not be able to drop in with everything. My experience with my therapist, and I love having every other week my therapy session, 1 hour is the best. highly advocate for anybody who can access it to do it. And what I like about it is actually the fact that it's like kind of a step removed from the people who really know me, you know, in some ways it means there's somebody who can be a little more neutral. Mm-hmm. And if a counselor is doing what they're supposed to be doing, it's less about them having to hear all the things, all the drama, like talk therapy sort of like things that people do. Mm-hmm. It's not really that. What they're really there to do is to help provide different tools and techniques for you to manage your mental health as you want to, right? Mm-hmm. To recognize like where there might be something that's blocking you or keeping you from getting to where you want to go. Mm-hmm. Like my therapist walked me through this really cool sort of like self-assessment to do when I feel angry, because I was like really noticing my anger was flaring and I was like having physical responses that were really strong and like just wanted to check in with myself. So she was like, all right, like let me break it down for you. Like anger shows up, like first you ask yourself a question, like what ethic or like what thing, what wrong, like what is this root of why I feel angry, like what's been wronged here, right? And then like ask yourself the question, like, you know, is that something I need to hold on to actually? Like, is that a value that serves me? Is that something I should be mad about? And like, if the answer is yes, they're like, okay, now who's this person who I'm angry at who stepped over the line? Like, are they somebody who it's worth like getting into it with, right? And if they're close to you, then the answer might be yes, right? Because you want them to know like, hey, this hurt me and I love you, so can you show up different? Versus someone who's like just said something stupid and you don't know them and you're in the grocery store and it's like, you know what, I don't need to like burn my energy on you. So yeah, anyway, like it's just an example, right? But it's sort of like given practical tools, and like she doesn't know all the ins and outs of the complexities of my anger and what it's all made out of necessarily, right? But she can just kind of hear me bring stuff up and give me some practical tools and things. So that's why I like having those sessions, and to me it doesn't replace the need then for also having my people who know me and who I can drop in and say anything to, and like that's more to me like mentorship or peer support or just like good friendships, right? What Clubhouse does, like we're not professional mental health service providers, but like we're Clubhouse, like we come together, this is our house, we look out for each other. It's more like that vibe. So I think both things together is like the ideal combination.
Like even me with like peer support, like if you were to come to me, like I'm not a therapist, but like I can like probably try to relate, so like you know you aren't alone, or even just like listen, because like some people just like need to like say stuff so it's not inside all day, and like you can just know like it's not like going anywhere, it's gonna stay confidential and stuff like that. So
Someone wanted to get in touch with you or get on the show to talk about what's going on, is there a way for them to do that?
Yeah, you could email me at schooldurincorona@gmail.com, schooldurincorona@gmail.com. And if you want to like get more of like I wouldn't say fast connection, but like I don't know, a little bit of a more like immediate response, you can email me from my Instagram. It's Black Flourishment, but you know, if you email me from my Instagram, that will give you a more immediate response. So, yeah. And you also send me some links of articles about reconsidering discipline during the pandemic for schooling.
Yeah, I was I love radio. I was listening to the radio today. I was listening to NPR, and there's this show called 1A, and they do sort of like topical news coverage and or like in-depth stories on topical like kind of issues. So yeah, I was listening to the segment. It was about school discipline during the pandemic, and I mean, I've done a lot of research and a lot of like advocacy around what was already a really problematic school discipline sort of approach. Like over the last 10, 15 years, there's been a huge shift toward really punitive responses, kind of like three strikes, you're out kind of rules, higher rates of suspension, higher rates of out of school suspensions. And the most kind of egregious thing is like an ever increasing presence of law enforcement and the police in school discipline issues, all the way down to like elementary school students, right? Like having 5-year-old kids actually have like police intervene on them because they're having like temper tantrums, like really kind of terrifying way to think about how to handle, like, especially as we're talking about mental health, right? Young people.
Recently a cop, they like handcuffed and was saying all these like things to a 7-year-old boy who had like autism in the school. He was having like a fit or something. So it was like sad to see.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like egging him on and stuff. I'm like,
Yeah, and in this segment, what they were, the first they kind of opened and they were telling the story about this fourth grader who's he has ADHD and like a couple other like learning challenges already. Like the school knew about, right? Like this kid had been in their system already. Like, so like switching to online learning is hard for everybody. His mom was like, "Hey, it's been challenging, but we've been there for it." And, she was saying that he was getting disciplined because the teacher was making all the students put their masks on, even though they were home online. Just kind of boggles the mind. And then, I guess at some point he pulled out a Nerf gun, like he had his toys around. Fourth grader, right? Kid. He's black. And this is in Maryland, I think it was. And the school, they saw what had happened. They talked to the mom, who was like, "Oh, like, I'm so sorry. He had his toy with him. Like, I like recognized that like he shouldn't have his toys on the thing." Like, took it away. Was like totally there for the conversation. And then she gets a call 3 hours later, and like the police are coming to investigate the incident. And just, yeah. And then later, they caught on body cams that the school administrators and the police had been like laughing about it and sort of mocking it and be like, "Oh yeah, maybe it's loaded. Should we be worried?" And so it was like sort of like the shocking.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, shocking. And now she's actually actively writing legislation at the state level in Maryland that's designed to sort of like respond right now to pandemic school discipline issues and just like changing how that can happen. Like, she's not busy enough already trying to keep her kid in school, but now you got to go write laws to keep her kid safe. But yeah, so that really struck me. And then what really also struck me in the article was in the radio bit, was they were talking about how a lot of teachers are sort of responding to this moment with like doubling down, like even more sort of strict discipline, 3 strikes you're out sort of stuff than they would normally in school, which is just so curious given like, I guess it's like a panic control response to online learning. But it just feels so antithetical to what young people need right now. So yeah, just want to bring it up because I wanted to bring it up on the show because I think there's a lot of things to find yourself potentially getting disciplined for in this moment in time, and the stakes are high when like there's more CPS involvement or police involvement or the ability for them to come to your home. Like, that was a big thing with the legislation. She was trying to have like more protections for privacy at home and like not being able to be told like what do you have to wear at home. It's like the person who got in trouble for not wearing shoes. I don't know. I hear these stories and they're so mind blowing that it's easy to almost dismiss them as like, those are just extreme examples. That's not like the norm, but that's like what people always say about.
Yeah, exactly.
What's
up? It's so frustrating. Like, I don't understand that thought process. Like, "Oh my God, dude, they're doing this and that." But like, it's like, don't worry about it. Like, it's not affecting you. And it's not even like it's like a big deal. Like, shoes, a toy gun with a 4-year-old. It's like ridiculous. So I don't understand it. Like, I want to, but I don't. Like I feel like the cops shouldn't be involved in the school anyways. Like, they're not doing anything but causing uncomfortability. So, and now with the corona going on, online schooling, they're coming to people's houses for like dumb stuff like that. It's just like they're bored. They don't have anything to do. Like, what were you saying though?
I was gonna ask you a question, which is, to me it seems like what matters is like, can you focus during class. And it's like, what do you need your classmates? Like, do you have issues with your classmates, like, distracting you, like, being problematic in school? Like, how do your online classes flow?
They flow pretty easy, besides, like, sometimes in algebra, like, his book isn't always in frame with the camera, and it gets annoying every time trying to, like, tell him that, so I just don't even do it anymore. And, like, sometimes the Wi-Fi will go in and out, so his, like, screen will, like, show, like, the book, and then, like, 2 seconds after that, it won't show the book. It'll show his profile picture, and then a second later, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's not every day, but that's sometimes, and it gets frustrating because I miss notes, and then I don't, like, understand the lesson. So, then I get distracted sometimes. Like, I'll look at my phone, and I'll, like, look off to the side, what's happening, like, out of the window and stuff like that. So
it doesn't seem like that really has anything to do with whether or not your fellow peers are wearing a mask or shoes on their camera during exactly. class. So it seems like your experience is totally just connected to what the teacher's doing. Mm-hmm. So, do you have the ability to chat and, like, are y'all see each other on video during class?
Yeah, we see each other in video, and, like, we can chat in the chat box with the teacher, but I've never seen anybody have a conversation, like, with another student in the chat box. So mm-hmm. I don't know what that thing is, if there's a policy against that, or I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that came up in the radio segment. It was, like, the, you know, teachers talking about their different policies with Zoom and, mm-hmm. and trying to figure that out. But, So school discipline just feels like one of the really important things for our community to just pay attention to. And I am worried about, like, youth just sort of slipping through the cracks, you know, and, mm-hmm. And a suspension. I mean, here's the other thing too, that kid, that was the thing, the fourth grader who that incident happened was suspended for 5 days from all what? Online learning. And I listen to what you tell me about, like, your coursework. Like, if you had to miss 5 days of online class, like, would you ever catch up?
I would not. Mm-mm. No. If I did, no, actually, no. Because, like, while you're trying to get that done, everything else is, like, going behind. Mm-mm, I would not come back from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I don't know. It'd be good for us to maybe be tracking on the show if, like, suspensions are happening actually in Catskill or the other high schools with online learning. I don't know if you've heard about that at all, but
no, I'm gonna reach out on my Snapchat to my my peers at the school and ask if any of them got in trouble for anything stupid. If the teacher, like, requested, like, something that's dumb or whatever, or not reasonable, stuff like that, to see what's going on, because I haven't been aware of that. So
yeah, all right, we'll report back to y'all on the next school during Corona. Definitely. Happening locally on this issue. Mm-hmm. Speaking of local issues, you had some tea to spill, which is no longer so secret, but
I think on Monday, which was Monday, they announced that a teacher in a high school had Corona and a teacher in elementary school had Corona, and they delayed school. Instead of the hybrid starting on Tuesday, it started today. So, I don't think a 2-day delay is going to do anything, but I guess we can see where that goes. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad they're taking a cautious approach, to be honest. And 2 days is probably the amount of time they need to do contact tracing for that employee, would be my guess. Because that's, like, the typical situation you get handled, right? It's like a case shows up, and then you got to interview that person and figure out who all they were in space with, and then reach out to all those people, right, and do those contacts. And the sooner that can happen, the sooner you can keep a case from becoming an outbreak. So I'm glad they're doing, you know, taking a minute and doing that. And then, you know, the article I sent you, there was something in the Hudson Valley 360 about that schools around have also had a couple instances and different responses. Like the school that did a case, I think it was Hudson, but they didn't change anything in terms of what they were doing. Because I think the student had online, like they hadn't been in contact with anyone. So, you know, every school, like, I guess the punchline is cases are going to pop up. But it's reality. It really comes down to how well New York City and the schools are doing it. When that happens, immediate contact tracing and testing and, you know, response, and that doesn't become an outbreak. So I don't know. How does it make you feel? Like, are you nervous about it at all?
I'm not nervous because it's kind of selfish, but I'm not nervous because I know it's not going to get back to me. But I do appreciate that they did say no school on Tuesday, which was the day after, like, instead of being like, oh, just be like, you can come in, just be like extra careful. No, they didn't do that. So I do appreciate that. It's more like they're like trying to get in a rush, like get back into school because of the 2 days. They could have at least waited till this Tuesday or this Monday that's about to come up. But, you know, I'm not doing hybrid, so I guess I don't really feel the need to rush back into school versus the kids who are doing hybrid. So I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be curious as another poll, maybe just get a sense of like how nervous people like to do in hybrid actually are about catching COVID. Like, I'm curious.
The kids who are doing hybrid, you know, they log into the Google Meet as well, so everybody can see each other. A few of the teachers do show the students, and they are like spread out well, and they are all wearing their masks, and have to like use hand sanitizer when they like enter the room. And like when the class ended, they were like, if you're like here, like hybrid, wipe off your desk and chairs with Lysol and stuff like that. So
that's great. All right, cool. And like, you know, I think the hybrid model they've set up makes a ton of sense, right? Because you cut the number of, like, cut in half how many people are in, like, you split into two pods, so you're minimizing the potential, like, how many people are potentially in the same space. Yeah. And the way they did it with 2 days on and then a day to do a deep clean and then like another 2 days on, it's like, all right. Because I sometimes got questions like, how well do those classrooms get cleaned after every night? You know, but like if they're actually taking a whole day off with no students just to do the cleaning, which is how they described it for Catskill, I'm like, okay, that's pretty solid. So it's like, all right, they're doing the best they can, right? Yeah. With the situation in terms of giving y'all options. So, yeah. So is delay just 2 days, right?
Yeah, it started today.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
excuse me. I was gonna bring up something. What was it?
Give yourself a song break.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. While I'm finding something to put on, let me just try to remember what I had. It was something to do with students and. Yeah, I'm not too sure. Okay, let's look at this. Okay, guys, I'm gonna be right back. I'm gonna get my thoughts together, and I'll be back after the song break. Give me a second. Thank you. Okay, I remember what I was talking about. During those 2 days, the break, not the break, because we did have online schooling still, but all the teachers were required to teach at home, so they were being extra cautious about that too. So that was like, it was kind of like a thing to me of them saying, like, we are taking this very seriously, which they are, and I kind of applaud them, because, like, I said this last podcast, I didn't expect Catskill to, like, be the school to, like, take this very seriously, which they are. So that's very appreciated for me. And, this is kind of off topic, but my English teacher, she had her child with her, and he was, like, just so adorable. He's like, she's like, say hi to the class. Everyone was like, hi. It was new. It was nice. Everybody had a good time in that day in class. It was really fun. But I was gonna speak about also, other than that, like the parent situation. I just kind of brought that up out of nowhere because I forgot the other thing I was gonna talk about after that. What I was talking about, what the parent situation. Like, I guess we could just talk about that. Like, the parents being on the kid's back about online schooling, that can be pretty annoying. Because, like, I know my mom's not on my back, but she's on my, like, brother's back. He's not doing online schooling because he knows he's not going to, like, be able to focus and stuff. But she's, like, on his back about him, like, getting to school in the morning and making his bus and stuff. And that can, like, cause a lot of annoyance. So I kind of imagine, like, the annoyance it would cause, like, online when your parents, like, on your back, like, oh, get on at this time, get on that time. Like, just, I know the parents are trying to, like, do it for, like, the best interest of their child, but they kind of have to understand that, you know, the child kind of has to be independent, and, you know, having your parent on your back 24/7, it just gets annoying. Like, it's different coming from a teacher, but your parent, that can just get annoying, because they're always telling you what to do here and there and then. Not here and there and then, like, pretty much every second of the day. So, what do you think about children's parents trying to, like, be involved 100% in their life?
Oof. I did go to a school where my mom was a teacher at the school, so I did have that, like, weird experience. Mm-hmm. But it's still, like, having that, like, you know, like, literally could be in the room, like, are you doing your homework? Are you paying attention? What's your next thing? Are you in class? Like, yeah, that sounds, like, kind of stressful. And school, I think, is a place where you would go to learn how to, like, create your own sense of identity and agency, mm-hmm. and, like, autonomy outside of the home. So, like, for sure, if, like, you're not getting that and that's, like, up in your space and you're trying to learn, I totally hear you that, like, parents should just check in with themselves about that. Should, like, give themselves a minute to be like, okay, my kid doesn't have the same sort of outlets to be themselves, to get a space away from mom and dad, or, like, mm-hmm. whoever the hell, you know, is at home. But, you know, can I help create that sense for them, or, like, respect that, like, you know. But, like we talked about earlier, the stakes are really high, not just for, like, young people, but for their parents.
Yeah,
that schooling goes well. So I'm also not mad at parents for being concerned and wanting mm-hmm. to check in.
Yeah,
I think, you know, my question for you is, like, what is the right balance, and how can youth set themselves up better to, like, be, like, to have that independence? You know, like, what do you have to do on your end to keep your, to keep it so that you're respected as being able to handle it on your own?
I'd say just, like, show that you can take care of it. Like, log in every morning, do what you got to do, show up on time so there's no emails from the school. Your child showed up late this here and then, because then that, like, activates the, like, worry and concern in the parent. So just log in on time, be there, you know, obviously, like, with the exception of having, like, a bad internet connection, you know, being there on time. But also, like, I know this is hard because I'm having a hard time with this myself, but hand in your working time, because my teachers have been, like, emailing my mom and stuff, like, oh, make sure, like, get their work in, their grade isn't, like, the best. But, like, my grades aren't that bad. Like, I'm still passing all my classes, you know. They're just not, like, high up in the 90s. They're, like, 80s, 70s. So I'm trying to get the 70s up to 80s right now. But, yeah, get your work in on time, or try to. Log in on time. Pretty much all I can say right now. I haven't really pushed my... Sorry.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I mean, I really feel, too, for, like, if you can't literally have a door closed or your own space, like, and you don't really have control over that. Yeah. So I imagine that would be really difficult. That's where I think about, like, can you be empowered to find other places to do your schoolwork? You know, Clubhouse is a space where, like, there are some daytime hours, you know, that we can make work. If you need us, like, different place, just be online and do your class. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know where libraries are at right now, but I know that's something that keeps coming up with us too. But it's like, you know, also empowering yourself to try to, like, problem solve, like, if that's something that's hard for you, like, are there other safe places that you can go and do your classwork? And, like, dialogue, you know, be in a conversation. Like, I think right now it feels like so many different, everyone's struggling, everyone has a lot at stake, and it's sad to me to see kind of, like, different groups of people get pitted against each other, like parents and their kids at war with each other, even though, like, they're both struggling with the same sort of problem. Yeah. And, like, or teachers and students getting pitted against each other, even though, like, they're both responding to, like, what the school administration says has to happen. Yeah, it's like, the more I think everyone can just take a deep breath and say, like, how can we help all of us get through this? Okay. Yeah. The better the outcomes will be. And I hate that there's competing pressures that, you know, a teacher going more lax, so, like, loosening up on, like, homework or internet hours to try to meet students where they're at, like, then gives them issues on the back end because, you know, that's not what they're supposed to be doing. Or, you know, a teacher wants to tell their kid, like, oh, wow, I see how much you're struggling and unable mm-hmm. to do this classwork. Like, just, why don't you just take a semester? You know, I think college students can take a semester off and it's not, like, the end of the world. That's not true for high schoolers. Yeah, and, no. It's a shame in some way. I guess technically you just, like, redo the grade. And, yeah. Like, that does happen. But the consequences are really high. It's not something that's, like, socially accepted. And so it ends up with a lot of consequences, even though for some people that, like, just might need to be what happens. It's, I don't know. It's like, you never have that moment where you take a giant step back and, like, look at and it's like, what would the world really end if we just said, like, we're taking a year off school? I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it would. or, like, we're going to do a whole year of experimental schooling and, like, get rid of all our testing requirements. Or,
that'd be cool.
You know, just try totally to create new curriculums, like, limit it so their kids, you know, kids are only on the computer for 5 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Just try to do it different. Like, not say we're not going to provide anything because learning is important, but also just not be so attached to school having to be the mm-hmm. thing it was always been. It's that sense of, like, we have to continue with normalcy that feels sad to me because these are moments that allow for some adaptation and for evolution in some ways. If we let them, because, like, school needed a shaking up anyway. Let's be real. Definitely. Not like it was great before.
And it's, like, hard. Like, you have to, like, they expect you to get all these good grades, but, like, you have to, like, remember, like, that response said, we aren't machines. So you have to learn 45 elements. You have to learn all this new vocab. You have to learn a new lesson in algebra every day. You have to, there's just so much stuff you have to learn, like, shove it in, and they're expecting too much. Like, it's not healthy. So I'm, like, kind of going away from that real quick before we end this. The way teachers, I mean, I know it's the state, like they always say, but you know, if you're like in the class, like on the Google Meet doing virtual, and, like, let's say, for example, you just have your forehead showing or like half of your body. They're like, put your whole face in the camera. And like, I know it's not their fault, but like that just, that gets annoying. I know a lot of students are annoyed of that too. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, that's where, that's why I asked you that question. Like, what's actually distracting for you as a student? Like, is it distracting to you if a student's like half, has their head half out or like taps out of their screen?
It doesn't annoy anybody that I have class with. Like, they aren't concerned about whatever what another person's doing in their screen. Like, what? Like, you, like, if you don't show your whole face, they have to mark you as absent, and that's like ridiculous. So if you were if you shown up to school every day, this, like doing the virtual this year, if you have 100 in all your classes, scholar student, and you only showed your forehead or half your thing in the camera, and they like mark you absent for every day of the school year, then like, what's gonna happen then?
Yeah, that's kind of, it's another mind-boggling moment. I'm like, what?
Yeah, it's like, what? Stop.
Are they actually doing that? That's the question, right? Like, maybe that's the policy. Are teachers actually doing that? And if they are doing it, who's actually the one who's, like, who are they going after?
Yeah.
Like, this is the problem with school discipline, too, is people will want to deny that racism's real or that we have any sort of implicit bias, but the data don't lie.
Exactly.
And so when, you know, teachers are kind of able to have, teachers always have a little bit of flexibility, right, in whether they apply a rule or not. And like the reality bears out over and over and over again. It's about 10 times more likely they'll use it with a black student than they will with a white student. Yeah. So the stakes are high. But yeah, like, hey, I super appreciate all the polling you're doing because it gives us data. It gives us information about what is actually happening. Like, and I think we should reach out to the school maybe and ask for like, do they have an online teacher, like online school discipline policy, actually? Mm-hmm. I'd be curious about that.
I believe they do. I can look into that and give us some update next week. I think they do have one. I'm not too sure. If they don't, like you said, reach out and stuff. We'll reach out and get that information.
And if they don't, you know, there might be, this is, you know, I'm thinking about the story we were talking about at the very beginning, right? That the woman whose son had the you know, cops come because of what happened, and she's writing this legislation. And there's this, a lot of time, because it's all new, a lot of these questions aren't necessarily answered, right? So the school might not have an online school discipline policy yet, and they're kind of arbitrarily trying to, that's a window of opportunity. If you were like, hey, there are 10 student voices who want to come together and inform how you think about online learning and how to increase the rates of engagement, right? Like, isn't that your goal? we can help you do that. You know, I think it's really important to feel empowered in these moments to be like, hey, this is how it should be done. This could be, you know, because otherwise who knows who's in the back room trying to figure that out.
Yeah.
So, so it'd be great next week. Maybe we can get some other, we talk about what we know about it, don't know about it, get some polling data about what discipline stuff's actually happening with students, and then maybe start to do that advocacy piece of what should it look like and figure out how to start to talk to the school about how they can hold y'all better.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that was a really good conversation. like we said, we will update you guys next week on the school policy for online schooling. You know, if the students are facing unreasonable discipline for online and, you know, a lot of other things. And moving forward into the second week of hybrid, we'll see what's going on. If the students fear, for the health of getting COVID, I will post the polls probably 3 days prior to the podcast so we can get more responses from more students. So appreciate everyone tuning in. If you have any questions, feel free to email me at schooldurincorona@gmail.com, schooldurincorona@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all.
She just wants to be Beautiful she goes, unnoticed she knows. No limits she craves, attention she praises. An image she prays to be sculpted by the sculptor. Oh, she don't see the light that's shining deeper than the eyes can find it. Maybe we're made of blind souls. She tries to cover up her pain and cut her woes away. Cause cover girls don't cry after the face is made. But there's a hope that's waiting for you in the dark. You should know you're beautiful just the way you are. And you don't have to change a thing. The world could change its heart. No scars, see, you're beautiful. We stars and we're beautiful. Oh, 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 oh. And you don't have to change a thing. The world could change its heart. No scars, see, you're beautiful. We stars and we're beautiful. She has dreams to be an envy, so she's starving, you know. Cover girls eat nothing, she says. Beauty is pain and there's beauty in everything. What's a little bit of hunger? I can go a little while longer. She fades away, she don't see her perfect. She don't understand she's worth it. All that beauty goes deeper than the surface. Oh, oh. So to all the girls that's hurting, let me be your mirror. Help you see a little bit clearer. The light that shines within. There's a hope that's waiting for you in the dark. You should know you're beautiful just the way you are. And you don't have to change a thing. The world could change its heart. No scars, see, you're beautiful. We're stars and we're beautiful. Oh,
you have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
COVID-19 cases are on the rise nationwide and locally. 14 states hit their highest-ever case counts this week. The U.S. has passed 8 million confirmed cases. Quote, the third coronavirus surge has arrived, unquote, the authors of the COVID-19 tracking project declared in The Atlantic this week, noting that even the less infected Northeast is currently trending upward. None of this is good news heading into the winter, when more people will gather indoors and dry, cool air will boost transmission, says top infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci. Quote, you can't enter into the cool months of the fall and the cold months of the winter with a high community infection baseline, unquote, Fauci said on October 16th. Although positivity